and welcome to Weird on the Rocks. This is a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. I'm your host, Katie. It's very nice to be recording again. I know it's been quite a while. At the beginning of the year, I returned to work part-time, so I haven't had as much free time to work on the podcast, and life has just been very busy in general, which I'm sure you all can relate to. So I'm sorry that the schedule has been so sporadic and, you know, no promises moving forward with any type of set schedule. So, and I know that's probably extremely annoying to people listening, but I would rather just be honest and say I cannot stick to a schedule than promise something that I can't deliver on. So that's where we're at. I'm really trying to hold onto the show and keep it going in some capacity, even if it's just an episode here and there. So please just bear with me, and I hope you can all understand. Today's episode is going to be about a woman named Anna Delvey, who has been in the news over the past few years, and even more so recently with a Netflix show that came out on February 11th called Inventing Anna, based off of her story. I'm pretty sure I first heard of Anna Delvey on one of my favorite podcasts called Sinisterhood. If you have not listened to that, please go check it out. It's hosted by two women, Heather and Christy, and they are also in like a comedy group, so they're really funny. Heather is also a lawyer, so she kind of brings like the legal perspective to all the stories. It's one of the only podcasts that I listen to every single episode. So there's a plug for Sinisterhood. Go listen to them. But the story really made me intrigued by Anna as a person and her entire story and background, or lack thereof. Spoiler alert. She has been on my list of episode topics since I started the show, but I felt like this was the perfect time to do an episode with her because the new Netflix show just came out. And I assume that her name will probably once again be in the news due to this show. This episode isn't creepy necessarily, but it is definitely scary in its own way, in the sense that we never really truly know somebody, and people are not always who they say they are. So I hope that you enjoy this episode and find Anna Delvey to be as interesting and baffling as I do. You can find Weird on the Rocks on Facebook and Instagram at Weird on the Rocks Podcast, Twitter at weird_rocks, and the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com. Please subscribe wherever you're listening now so that you can always get the newest episode right when it's released. Before we get into the good stuff, I want to share this week's beverage of choice. Tonight I am drinking the High Noon canned vodka cocktails, and this is a pack that I got from Costco, which came with black cherry, grapefruit, watermelon, and pineapple. And tonight I'm drinking the pineapple one, which is probably my favorite, but they are all really good. Like a lot of us, I'm a really huge seltzer fan, and that's pretty much what I've been drinking at home lately. And I wanted to try something a little bit different, and these actually have vodka in them, but are still very seltzer-esque, nice and light and refreshing, you know, little sugar, low calories, low carbs, all that good stuff. So I highly recommend these. They're really delicious. All right, well, let's get into it. Cheers, and let's get weird. In 2017, 26-year-old Anna Delvey seemed to have it all. The German heiress was living in a swanky New York hotel that cost $400 a night. And with an almost $60 million inheritance coming her way, she was in the beginning stages of creating her own art museum. And she bumped elbows with some of New York's most elites, including Prince Harry, Lindsay Lohan, and Macaulay Culkin. However, Anna did have one problem, and that was, it was all a lie. Anna Sorokin was born in 1991 in Moscow, Russia. Her father was a truck driver and her mother owned a small convenience store, and Anna grew up middle class. One classmate of hers described her as an excellent student who had a strong character, but that she was easily offended. In 2007, at the age of 16, the Sorokin family moved to Germany, and Anna attended high school. In Germany, her peers described her as quiet and that she seemed to have a very hard time learning the German language. She graduated in 2011 and moved to London on her own, where she attended Central St. Martin's, an art school. However, she did not last long and quit university and returned to Germany to be with her family. Once back in Germany, she landed a job working for a public relations company, then decided to move to Paris where she would have more job opportunities. In Paris, she began an internship for the French art and fashion magazine Purple. During this time, Anna dropped her surname and socially began calling herself Anna Delvey, claiming Delvey was her mother's maiden name, but it was a name that both her parents would later say they had never heard of. This new job at Purple Magazine required that Anna attend events with high-profile celebrities and social figures, including Fashion Week in New York City. Anna quickly fell in love with the hustle and bustle of New York and found it much easier to make friends than in Paris, so she decided to stay and continue to work for Purple Magazine from their Manhattan office. Anna continued to meet rich and famous people through her job, and many of these relationships moved from professional to personal. Anna began going out in the city to well-known bars and nightclubs and making a name for herself in the New York party scene. Photos from this time show her always dressed in designer clothes, but with intentionally messy hair, minimal makeup, and expensive Celine eyeglasses. This carefree and chic, yet disorganized style would soon be Anna's signature look. In an interview with Australia's 60 Minutes, Maria Konnikova, author and psychologist, said, quote, "She arrives on the scene in New York City and just kind of arrives with a capital A. She knows exactly how to present herself so that she right away is going to be welcomed into New York society," end quote. In 2014, a year after landing in New York, Anna quit her job at Purple Magazine. It was around this time that she began talking more openly about her family history and personal finances. Anna claimed that her father was a billionaire back in Europe, telling people that he was either a Russian diplomat, an antiques collector, or a solar energy tycoon. However, her inconsistent background stories didn't seem to matter to people because she had money, a lot of it. Anna claimed that she had millions of dollars in her bank account and would soon be inheriting $60 million. Around this time, Anna started her plans for a private members club and arts foundation, which she was humbly naming the Anna Delvey Foundation. Her dream was to create an art and media hub with various locations around the globe, and the project was estimated to cost roughly $22 million. She proposed her idea to wealthy people in her social circle, and many were excited about her project, but few agreed to help finance it. Anna decided to seek the help of local banks by applying for business loans. To do this, Anna pretended to be a Swiss financier, emailing U.S. bank representatives on behalf of his client, Anna Delvey. She forged and photoshopped documents that showed proof of her fortune, with evidence that her bank account had millions of dollars. In 2016, she submitted her fake documents to City National Bank in hopes of securing her $22 million loan. But the bank declined her proposal, stating that she did not provide adequate bank statements. She then moved on to the Fortress Investment Group, which agreed to grant Anna a $100,000 credit advance. With her newly required $100,000, Anna checked into the 11 Howard Hotel in Manhattan. While most guests stayed only a few nights, and even celebrities rarely checked in for longer than a week, Anna began living at the $400 a night hotel. Hotel staff admitted to not knowing who Anna Delvey was, but didn't question her identity once she began tipping the valet, servers, bartenders, and concierge with crisp $100 bills for even the simplest of services. During this time, Anna became close friends with a woman named Rachel Williams, who worked as a Vanity Fair photo editor. The two started going out to bars and clubs in the city and attending social events together. Rachel said that Anna was very private about her personal background and family, and that she wasn't completely sure what Anna's father's job was or how she had so much money. But seeing Anna tip people in such large amounts, pick up tabs when they were out, and live in a hotel, Rachel just assumed that Anna was a private person, and she wanted to respect that. Anna continued to party with New York's elite and surrounded herself with the who's who of New York. While at a dinner party, Anna sat next to art collector and museum founder Michael Huang. Anna was known to be very confident and outgoing, often inserting herself into conversations. While at this dinner party, she learned that Huang was soon going to be attending the Venice Biennale, an arts organization in Venice, Italy, and Anna asked if she could join him. While Huang would later admit that he found this odd, he appreciated Anna's spirit and enthusiasm and agreed to take the trip together. Huang decided to book the flight and hotel with his own money, with the understanding that Anna would reimburse him. However, once returning to New York after the trip, Anna failed to pay Michael back. He assumed that Anna, who seemed to be quite the free spirit, was just absent-minded, and he did not push the issue. A few months later, Anna hosted a huge birthday party for herself at the New York restaurant Sadal's, and even hired a party planning company and a PR team to help organize the event and make sure the guest list included only the elite. A few weeks after the party, Michael Huang, who had attended, was contacted by the owner of Sadal's restaurant. They were asking him where they could find his friend, Anna Delvey, as the credit card number she had given them turned out to be invalid, and it appeared that she had left them fake contact information. They said they looked at Anna's personal Instagram page and saw Huang in a photo from her birthday and didn't know who else to contact. Michael didn't want this restaurant to pay for the absent-mindedness of his flaky friend, so he paid the bill, then immediately contacted Anna, asking for reimbursement. For several days, Anna made excuses about how all of her money was tied up in the Anna Delvey Foundation, and she didn't have the funds on her at the moment. But after pressing her further and remaining firm on the issue, she eventually repaid Huang through Venmo, but from the account of one of her friends. Rachel Williams continued to stay close friends with Anna, spending most of her time outside of work with her. Rachel said that Anna began to prefer staying at the hotel that she was living at instead of going out to different bars and restaurants. Rachel said that almost every night after work, Anna would call and ask for her to stop by, and the two would have dinner and drinks in the hotel lobby bar, and that Anna had a, quote, "I'll pay for everything" mentality, end quote. Rachel said that Anna would always pick up the bill and would just charge the tab to her room, something she didn't think much of at the time, assuming Anna was staying up to date with her payments. When Anna asked Rachel if she wanted to go on a trip with her to Morocco, Rachel was thrilled. She told Anna that not working for 2 weeks would greatly affect her finances, though, and Anna told her not to worry and that she would pay for the entire trip. Rachel admitted that she was extremely excited about the trip and that the two of them had a great time, laying around the pool and drinking cocktails. But on the last day of their trip, two resort managers tracked Anna down, stating that they were not allowed to leave without a functioning credit card on file. Apparently, when they checked in, Anna said she had to contact her bank and let them know she was out of the country and she would return to put a card on file. However, this never happened, and the staff, seeing how Anna was acting, assumed that she was some type of celebrity and figured she was good for the money. Apparently, the person who checked Anna and Rachel in without a card was actually fired over this, as it was resort policy to have a customer's information on file upon check-in. Anna explained to them that she still hadn't been able to contact her bank, and that without their authorization, she wouldn't be able to charge the trip to her card. She asked Rachel to put her card on file for now, and that when they checked out, Anna would charge her card, and that no money would actually get charged to Rachel. Rachel agreed, and the managers left their room. The next day, Rachel had to fly back to the States to return to work, but Anna was staying for another day. Once landing in New York and able to use her phone again, Rachel got a notification from her credit card company that the entire trip had been charged to her card, totaling $62,000. More than Rachel's annual salary. She said that she immediately began to panic, knowing that she absolutely would not be able to pay this, and she tried contacting Anna. It took several days for Anna to return Rachel's calls, and she explained that she was in contact with her bank and had to move some money around, but that Rachel would be reimbursed soon. But Rachel would never receive a dime. She admitted that this large amount of debt looming over her caused her to suffer from anxiety and panic attacks, and that it affected her personal and work life. She said she would wake up every day thinking about this money and was scared of facing legal issues. She said she pressed Anna for months about the money and that Anna would make up excuse after excuse. She eventually realized that her so-called best friend was someone she really didn't know at all, and that Anna was a con artist. After several months of living in the 11 Howard Hotel, the management realized that Anna, who always wore designer clothes and tipped their staff generously, had not paid any of her $30,000 bill. Once again, the card she had on file turned out to be fraudulent. When approached about the issue and told that she must give them an authorized credit card or be kicked out, Anna sent the hotel staff an entire case of 1975 Dom Pérignon champagne, with each bottle costing a whopping $1,500. However, hotel management saw straight through this seemingly kind gesture and forbade the staff from keeping the gift. In April of 2017, Anna deposited $160,000 worth of fraudulent checks into her Citibank account and was able to withdraw $70,000 of it before they were processed. With some of this money, Anna wired the sum of her outstanding bill to 11 Howard, but since she still failed to secure a card on file, she was evicted and was not allowed back into her room to retrieve her belongings. With nowhere to go and no possessions, Anna began sleeping on friends' couches. She even reached out to Rachel Williams, who, despite never being paid her $62,000, allowed Anna to briefly stay with her. Rachel said that Anna was in rough shape, wearing the same dress every day and lacking in personal hygiene. Eventually, Anna was able to acquire some money and once again checked into a hotel to live, this time at the Beekman Hotel in Manhattan. And once again, she was able to do so without securing a card on file. Around this time, Anna traveled to Omaha, Nebraska, and learned that her returning flight had been delayed due to inclement weather. She was adamant that she needed to return to New York promptly for business and tried to convince the airline to put her on a different flight. When they refused to give her any special treatment, Anna reached out to Blade Air Mobility, a flight service whose CEO, Robert Wiesenthal, she had recently met at a dinner. Anna somehow convinced the company to book her a private plane back to New York without paying the $40,000 upfront fee, based strictly off the fact that she knew the CEO, and they believed that she was an acceptable lending risk. However, once back in New York, the company still had not received any money and pushed Anna for a payment. She eventually sent Blade a forged wire transfer confirmation slip. Once it was clear to the company that Anna was not going to pay, CEO Robert Wiesenthal reported Anna to the police for fraud. Just several weeks after Anna scammed Blade Mobility, her new home of the Beekman Hotel also started to become suspicious. After racking up a bill of $11,000 with no credit card number on file and getting excuse after excuse from Anna, the Beekman evicted her. She quickly moved on to the W Hotel in Union Square and once again tried to check in without a card, convincing the staff that she was having banking issues and would settle it soon. However, this time she was evicted after just 2 days of no payment. The Beekman and the W Hotel both pressed charges against Anna within just weeks of each other. And little did she know, she was already being independently investigated by the Manhattan's District Attorney's Office for bank fraud. In July of 2017, Anna Sorokin was arrested for her outstanding hotel bills, as well as skipping out on a $200 restaurant bill at the Le Parker Meriden Hotel. But she was quickly released. In August, a grand jury convened to consider the charges against Anna. The jury agreed to indict her on 2 counts of attempted grand larceny in the first degree, 3 counts of grand larceny in the second degree, 1 count of grand larceny in the third degree, and 1 count of misdemeanor theft of services. Her most serious charge of grand larceny in the first degree was from her fraudulent bank loan applications to City National Bank and the Fortress Investment Group. The other larceny charges were from check fraud and not paying her bill at the Moroccan resort, and the theft charges were from not paying her hotel and restaurant bills. In October of 2017, Anna was staying at Passages Malibu, an addiction treatment center in Los Angeles. In a sting operation conducted by Manhattan police officer Michael McCaffrey, he had Anna's friend Rachel Williams pretend to be visiting LA and asked Anna to leave the center for a few hours to grab lunch. When Anna walked outside to leave, she was arrested by the Los Angeles police. 2 weeks later, Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. formally announced the indictment against Anna Sorokin and asked any of her fraud victims to come forward as witnesses. During this time, Anna was held at Rikers Prison in New York. Ahead of her trial, Anna was offered a plea deal with a jail sentence of 3 to 9 years, but she considered this too long and decided to go ahead with a trial. While in Rikers, Anna displayed disobedient behavior such as fighting and not following orders, and spent a week in solitary confinement. Anna would later say that she loved being in jail and found it to be very interesting, and that she learned a lot. She also said that she was viewed as a celebrity there, and that she was known as the girl who stole from rich people. The media and internet were buzzing with talk of Anna, and people seemed to be incredibly interested in the story of the fake German heiress. The New York Post even wrote an article about Anna and her fraudulent behavior with the headline, "Wannabe Socialite Busted for Skipping Out on Pricey Hotel Bills." And her former friend Rachel Williams wrote an article for Vanity Fair titled, "My Bright Lights Misadventure with a Magician of Manhattan." In this article, Rachel details how her and Anna met and became friends, saying, quote, "I can't remember which arrived first, the expectant bucket of ice and stack of glasses, or Anna Delvey, but I knew that she had appeared, and with her came bottle service. She was a stranger to me, and yet not unknown. I'd seen her on Instagram, smiling at events, drinking at parties, oftentimes alongside my own friends and acquaintances. I'd seen that at Anna Delvey had 40,000 followers." End quote. She also spoke of Anna's passion project, the Anna Delvey Foundation, saying, quote, "Anna told us huffily that she'd spent the day in meetings with lawyers. For what?" I asked. She lit up. She was hard at work on her art foundation, a dynamic visual art center dedicated to contemporary art. She explained, referring vaguely to a family trust. She planned to lease the historic Church Missions House, a building on Park Avenue, South and 22nd Street, to house a night lounge, bar, art galleries, studio space, restaurants, and a members-only club. In my line of work, I had often encountered ambitious, well-off individuals, so though her understanding sounded grand in scale and promising in theory, my sincere enthusiasm hardly outweighed a measured skepticism. End quote. Rachel also talked about Anna's interests, stating, quote, "Anna did most of the talking. She held court, having befriended the hotel staff and servers, with me as her trusted advisor and loyal confidant. She would tell me about her meetings with restaurateurs, hedge fund managers, lawyers, and bankers, and her frustration over delays with the lease signing of the Church Missions House. She mused about chefs she'd like to bring in, artists she esteemed, exhibitions that were opening. She was savvy. I felt a mixture of pity and admiration for Anna. She didn't have many friends, and she wasn't close with her family. She said that her relationship with her parents felt rooted more in business than in love, but she was strong. Her impulsivity and a sort of tactlessness had caused a rift between Anna and the friends through whom I'd met her, but I felt that I understood her and would be there for her when others were not." End quote. And of course, Rachel talked about the infamous trip to Morocco that left her with a $62,000 bill. She said, quote, "Two men stepped forward as Anna approached. They pulled her aside and she sat down to make a call. Another employee mentioned that someone had been fired because of the trouble with our villa's payment. A functioning credit card should have been on file before we'd arrived," he explained. "The men followed us back to our villa. As Anna spoke, clipped phrases into her phone. They stood ominously on the edge of our living room. I offered them chairs, but they declined. I offered them water, smiling, trying to diffuse the tension. They declined. Anna sat in front of them, intensely focused. I excused myself, feeling the embarrassment of the situation and thinking it best to give Anna some privacy, since there was nothing I could do to help. Anna was no longer making calls. She sat there blankly. The men insisted that a functioning card was needed for a block on the reservation's balance only, not to be charged for the final bill, which could be settled later. First Anna and then the men pressured me to put down my credit card for that block while Anna sorted out the situation with her bank. I was stuck. I had exactly $410.03 in my banking account. I had no alternative transportation from the hotel. I wanted to go home. And most importantly, I was told that my card would not be charged. As I arrived at my destination, I received a text from Anna promising that she'd forward a wired confirmation as soon as possible. Seeking reimbursement from Anna became a full-time job. Stress consumed my sleep and fueled my days. My coworkers saw me unravel. I came to the office looking pale and undone. At last, a month after I left Marrakesh, Anna claimed to have picked up a cashier's check. She had been upstate dealing with a work emergency, but had made it to a bank before closing time and would deposit the check into my account in the morning, she said. This news should have incited a wave of relief, but instead, I remained skeptical. Her room was a mess. Papers were everywhere. Her suitcases lay open and overflowing. Her black linen dress from Morocco hung in dry cleaner's plastic from an open-air closet. Where's the check? I questioned, trying to make the transaction simple. She shuffled through piles of papers, looking under clothing and dumped out various bags before claiming to have left the check in the Tesla she'd driven back from upstate. Of course, it couldn't be this easy. Of course, there was a problem. She called the Tesla dealership and then her lawyer's office. He must have it, she said. I refused to leave. Anna said the check would be dropped off, so I waited. I went with her to Le Coucou, where she met with a different lawyer and a private wealth manager. I followed her back to the lobby in the Beekman, where she ordered oysters and a bottle of white wine. I sat in silence, sending work emails from my phone, largely ignoring Anna, but keeping a watchful eye and asking periodically for an update. To prove a point, I stayed until 11 p.m. I left angrily, telling her I'd be back at 8 a.m. so we could go together to the bank. She agreed. I hope you had fun at least, she chirped with an impish grin. No, this was not fun. This is not okay, I stammered incredulously. The next morning, I arrived at the hotel on time. Anna was not there. I was livid. Her overt evasion confirmed what I had feared most. Anna was not to be trusted, end quote. In April of 2019, Anna's trial began. Her defense attorney, Todd Spodek, hired personal stylist Anastasia Walker for Anna, saying, quote, it is imperative that Anna dress appropriately for the trial, end quote. On her first day of the trial, Anna entered wearing large Celine glasses and a black choker to match, with stylist Anastasia Walker saying she was going for a mysteriously chic look. In the following days, Anna would wear other designers, including Michael Kors and Yves Saint Laurent. An entire Instagram account was even created specifically for documenting Anna's trial fashion choices. On day three of the trial, proceedings were delayed due to a wardrobe problem, and Justice Diane Kiesel gave Anna a verbal warning, saying, quote, this is unacceptable and inappropriate. This is not a fashion show, end quote. In response to the situation, the prosecution stated that Anna, quote, showed more concern for her attire than the emotions of those she hurt, end quote. Rachel Williams testified as a main witness in the trial, chronicling her time with Anna and her extravagant spending habits, even at one point breaking down and saying, quote, I wish I had never met Anna, end quote. The prosecution also called a woman named Nefertari Neff Davis, who worked as a concierge at the 11 Howard Hotel. Davis said, quote, usually tourists just come in and ask how to get to the Statue of Liberty. But then you have this girl who's draped in Rick Owens, huge Celine glasses, messy hair, European accent, hundreds of dollars of bills on her, and she's literally just giving it to me for my time. It's really none of my business where the money comes from, end quote. The defense used the argument that Anna fully had the intention of paying back every single one of the people and businesses she owed money to, and that she was just paying off her own debts first. Anna's lawyer, Todd Spodek, tried to make her story sound glamorous and a true New York story about someone who came from nothing, turning themselves into something, quoting Frank Sinatra's song, New York, New York, and even comparing Anna to the famous singer, saying, quote, in a city that favors money and the appearance of money, they both created their own opportunities, end quote. He also tried to paint the picture of a sweet, innocent girl who just wanted to be liked, saying, quote, Anna had every intention of doing things the right way, but she couldn't open those doors without doing something a little bit gray to open the door. Everyone creates the version of themselves that they want the world to see. Everyone lies when it's convenient to them, and Anna did the same thing. She couldn't be 100% honest because no one would listen to her, end quote. The prosecution, however, argued that Anna had no intention of paying these people back, and even if she did, that she physically did not have the funds to do so. They were adamant that Anna purposely scammed and conned people out of money in order to live a glamorous and extravagant lifestyle that she herself simply could not afford. They argued that just because most of her victims were wealthy and not short on cash made them no different, and that fraud is fraud, no matter the victim. After 2 days of deliberation, a jury found Anna Sorokin guilty on 8 charges, including grand larceny in the second degree, attempted grand larceny, and theft of services. She was found not guilty on two charges, one of attempted grand larceny in the first degree and one of larceny in the second degree. On May 9th, 2019, Anna was sentenced to 4 to 12 years in prison, fined $24,000, and ordered to pay restitution of $200,000, and was sent back to Rikers Island. In February of 2021, after serving a total of less than 4 years in prison, Anna Sorokin was released on good behavior. She soon began doing interviews with the media, talking of her time in prison and trying to explain who she really is. In an interview with ABC News correspondent Deborah Roberts in May of 2021, when asked who is the real Anna Sorokin, she replied, quote, "That's a loaded question. I would like to show the world that I'm not this dumb, greedy person that they portrayed me to be," end quote. In the interview, she also admitted that she always knew she couldn't afford her lavish lifestyle and that she knew she couldn't pay any of those people back, but that she was, quote, "trying to fix that," end quote. Anna also did an interview with 60 Minutes Australia, in which she appeared to be extremely aloof and indifferent to any of her scrutiny. When asked by correspondent Liam Bartlett, quote, "Do you feel bad about some of the people that got burnt along the way?" end quote. Anna replies, quote, "Can you name me the names of the people and I'll tell you if I feel bad about them," end quote. He also asked, quote, "So you just wanted to go straight to the top?" end quote. And Anna says, quote, "Kind of, yes. Why waste my time? The people at the top didn't strike me as too smart or too talented, so I felt like, why care?" end quote. Bartlett also brings up the large tips that Anna would leave service workers, to which Anna says, quote, "If someone is impressed by a $100 bill, I don't know what to tell them," end quote. Followed by saying, quote, "I don't have patience for people's stupidity," end quote. Anna also was adamant that this experience didn't bring her down and that she is trying to move forward. When Bartlett says, quote, "Your lawyer has described you as a role model," end quote, Anna laughs and says, quote, "Well, thank you. I wouldn't say I'm a role model, I guess. Like, I'm trying to change the narrative right now. And like, I'm trying to turn all this attention and all the opportunities I've been given towards something good," end quote. Bartlett responds with, quote, "Well, that's encouraging because I would have thought that being a role model is something you most certainly are not. I mean, you wouldn't want to inspire people to be fraudsters, would you?" end quote. To which she smiles and says, quote, "Well, I'm not a fraudster, so I wouldn't know," end quote. Anna goes on to say that everything has turned out pretty well, to which Bartlett responds, quote, "Well, it didn't turn out very well for you. You went to jail," end quote. And Anna says, quote, "I felt like I just did all this, like I had this amazing experience and I'm going to write a book about it, so I don't regret it personally," end quote. In October of 2021, Anna was detained by ICE for overstaying her visa, and an immigration judge ruled that she stay in custody until her immigration status is figured out, in which she will most likely be deported back to Germany. She is currently being held in custody in Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention. In 2020, Anna sold the rights to her story to Netflix and Shonda Rhimes, creator of Grey's Anatomy. But because New York state law doesn't allow criminals to profit from their crimes, the money from the deal has to first be used to pay her victims back. For this deal, Anna is being paid $320,000. And has so far used it to pay her $24,000 fine, as well as $200,000 in restitution to her victims. Inventing Anna, starring Ozark's Julia Garner as Anna herself, released on February 11th, 2022. Anna's friend Rachel Williams, who Anna tricked into paying $62,000 for a Morocco vacation, has also released a New York Times best-selling book called My Friend Anna. Okay, so that's gonna be it for today's episode. I just want to say, I hate this girl. I find her so incredibly annoying, and I hate how smug and nonchalant she is about the crime she's committed. I encourage all of you to look up interviews of her on YouTube and hear her accent that most people think is fake, and just the look that she has on her face when she's doing these interviews. She seems so flippant and does not seem to care at all about anything that she has done, and seems honestly very delusional to me. She reminds me a lot of Elizabeth Holmes, the creator of Theranos, who I covered in episode 25. They are both people who so badly want fame and success, and they will create false narratives about themselves and scam people just to get ahead and make themselves appear more successful. In my opinion, they are both mentally unstable and completely delusional. with no real sense of reality or any self-awareness. While researching this episode, I looked on Reddit to see what people think of Anna Sorokin, and I was surprised that there are a lot of people out there who think she did nothing wrong. And maybe you listening also agree with that. Many people point out the fact that the friends who Anna scammed willingly gave her their money, that she never actually stole from them. She asked for money and they gave it to her. And many believe that these people were just being irresponsible with their money and that they should have made better choices. And if they could so easily fork over large amounts of money to someone that they barely knew, that it was a matter of time before someone else would scam them, and that Anna was just kind of the first one smart enough to actually do it. Some also believe that if a business was irresponsible enough to allow someone to rack up these large bills without ever collecting from them, that this is their problem to fix and that it should be a wake-up call for them to maybe have better business practices, and that that's not Anna's fault that she found a loophole and took advantage of it. Some also believe that Anna should not have to pay back any of these people or businesses, and that there really aren't any victims in this story, that everyone should just learn a lesson and kind of move on from this. I personally can see both sides of this. I do agree that some of these people were definitely being far too lenient with their money, and, you know, meeting someone at a dinner party and then giving them money, that's ridiculous. I don't think anyone should do that, no matter how much money you have. That's never a good idea. And I also agree that the businesses who allowed Anna to, you know, rack up these large hotel bills with no card on file, and that restaurant where she had her birthday party, that's very unprofessional and irresponsible. And hopefully these businesses learn something and they have better protocol in place now, because that's quite ridiculous that these establishments allowed her to do that for so long without ever seeing any money. However, I do absolutely think that Anna Sorokin is a criminal and a delusional person who sees nothing wrong with what she did, and that she will most likely just continue to prey on people, maybe in different ways, maybe not with money, but I'm sure she's going to continue taking advantage of people that she sees that she could benefit from them. People like this are really scary to me because they completely lack empathy for others, and their only goal is just to be on top and to win and to have people beneath them. I keep thinking back to at the beginning of the episode where I mentioned that her peers in school said that she's easily offended. And I kind of see this as something where Anna was maybe belittled or put down or bullied, or, you know, maybe just seen as a very average, typical girl. And she saw this as a way to get back at these people that she was below, and she wanted to be above them, and scamming them, taking their money, kind of making them look stupid, really, that she got off on that, that she got off on making others seem below her. I think that she needs serious mental health counseling, and I also really, really hope that she is deported back to Germany, because she has no business being here, and hopefully she doesn't go to Germany and start doing the same thing. I'm glad that she did go to jail and saw that her behavior, you know, results in real consequences. And I wish she was there longer, honestly. But, you know, hopefully it's enough to deter her from continuing on this path and not wanting to go back to jail. The Netflix show Inventing Anna came out on February 11th. So I'm recording this on the 18th. It's been out for a week now. I have watched 3 episodes, I believe. And honestly, I think it's very horrible. they took the approach of making this like a dramatization of the story, and everything in it seems to be pretty made up. They have characters that are not real characters. They're not naming actual celebrities. And they put into the storyline that Anna has this boyfriend who owns this business, a lot of things that just did not happen in true life. So it's kind of interesting the route that they took to tell her story. I'm not a huge fan of it. I wish it was a little bit more documentary style. That would have been more interesting to me. But Julia Garner, who plays Ruth on Ozark, she's a great actress. I think she does a wonderful job. But it's not really my thing, not my type of show. But it's very Scandal-esque. There are a lot of actors from the show Scandal. So if you like Scandal, you'll probably like this show. But it's just a little cheesy for me. But if you're interested in this episode and learning more about Anna, then you should watch it. There are some things in there that seem true to the story. you know, I'm just kind of annoyed also by the whole idea of her having a show like this. And although in New York, there is the law, she cannot profit from this as being a criminal. I'm sure there's some way that she's going to keep some of this money. And if not, you know, it's putting her name out in the news again. She most likely, once she's released from detention or sent back to Germany, whatever happens to her, I'm sure she'll be back on Instagram racking up the followers. You know, she'll probably start a makeup or clothing or sunglasses line or something. And, you know, people love to hate people. And people like that kind of go far in our society, sadly. So I'm just, you know, I'm interested to see where she goes from here. And as much as I'm intrigued by her, I will try not to give her any of my attention moving forward, but we'll see. But as always, I would love to hear what you guys think. I want to know, do you think that Anna Sorokin is a criminal and what she did is wrong and that she should be legally punished? Or do you see this as a victimless crime and that she was simply seizing the opportunities that were presented to her and that she took advantage of what was in front of her? And maybe she was just the first person smart enough to figure it out. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. You can find the show on Facebook and Instagram at Weird on the Rocks Podcast, Twitter at Weird_Rocks, and the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today and for supporting the show. I appreciate every single one of you. And until next time, cheers and stay weird.